Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. A burning issue for many parents right now is sending children back to school, whether it's kindergarten, high school, college, or university. Making a decision about what to do can be gut-wrenching. Things are compounded by the ever-changing landscape as the provincial government keeps making announcements and school boards release their plans. Then the media is full of varying perspectives from experts and others trying to weigh in with advice. Today's show tries to shed some light on what is happening in Northumberland. There are two critical interviews. The first is with Diane Lloyd, chair of the Kawartha Pine Ridge District School Board. She is returning to follow up on an earlier interview. Since we last spoke, the board has released its plans for the fall. Just one note. For the school board's interview, I solicited questions from parents and others via social media. The topics ranged from busing to independent education plans to using supply teachers. Some common questions were combined while others were asked directly. I want to thank everyone who took the time to respond. I hope I was able to get some solid answers. If not, there's some good advice during the interview as to how to get those specifics. So let's start with my conversation with Diane Lloyd, Chair of the Public School Board. I'm so pleased to welcome Diane Lloyd, Chair of the Kawartha Pine Ridge District School Board, to consider this. Welcome, Diane.
Oh, thank you.
Before we begin, I want to let you know that I went on social media and invited some people to submit questions. So many of the questions I'll be asking you today are based on them. So I just wanted to let you know. First of all, what makes your school board's draft reopening plan a good one?
Well, I think that we've spent a lot of time making sure that we're putting everything that we can in place. I mean, we've ensured that everything that we're doing is approved by the health authorities. We've had a lot of direction from the ministry. We're not trying to cut corners. You know, we're trying to do as much as we can to make sure that everything we need to have in place from a safety point of view and from an education point of view are in place for September.
Can we start by talking about masks? A lot of parents are unclear about mask wearing.
Well, we've certainly been having conversations lately around masks because a lot of people are concerned that some of the younger children may not be wearing masks. This discussion was held with the health authorities who came back and felt that there were a lot of problems with younger children and masks. For instance, they might, they're picking at them all day. They're not keeping them clean. They could sneeze into them. They could do a number of things, and then they put their hands on their face because it's not comfortable and they're not used to it. They touch some hard surfaces in the school, and then you've got some other problems as well. So that's kind of the thinking around masks, that it would be very difficult for younger children. And then there's another whole line of thought around, children can certainly be trained to wear masks. So right now, the ministry is telling us to not insist. We're highly encouraging that all students wear a mask, but we're going along with the ministry and saying that it's a choice of parents.
Can parents come forward to their particular school and say, we'd like it for our school, or does it have to be an individual choice or a board-wide choice? Could you clarify that a bit?
At this point, it's a provincial choice. I mean, there are some boards that are trying to make decisions that change that a little. And what we've been told basically is if the health department in our own area go along with what we're wanting to do, then they would support it as well.
What should parents expect in terms of class size?
Well, we're not sure yet, because right now we're asking parents to let us know whether or not they're going to send their children back, because they do have the option to go with distance learning. So until we actually have those answers, we don't know how many students we'll be putting in each class. It will be reduced, by the number of students who choose to learn at home. And I really can't give you a number at this point, but they've said all children need to come back to school, and we minus the students learning at home and then do everything we can to ensure that, we have distancing and all the sanitation and hand washing that's necessary.
So you're not going to put a hard limit on the number in a particular classroom? It's going to be dependent on a number of factors. I understand that. But is it not possible for you to say, look, we're no matter what, we're not going to have any more than 8 or 10 or 15 students in a particular class? I mean, is that not a possibility?
It's not a possibility, no.
Now, in terms of physical distancing, how is that going to be working within the schools?
They're going to, we're going to do as much as we can to keep a cohort of students together. So if you happen to be in a grade one class, your whole day will be spent with that grade one class. So that will distance you from everybody else within the school. There's going to be a lot of rules around, you know, what hallways, which way you walk in the hallways, what door you go in and out, different staggered play times and lunch times to try and keep students apart. Within a classroom, they're going to move the desks and get as much distancing as possible. And then, again, just try to keep everything within that one cohort per class.
Now, what about in terms of the early grades, keeping young people apart? I mean, obviously, you know, children...
It's going to be a nightmare, isn't it?
What sort of strategies are you taking into the classroom, though, to try? Have you got any policies or have you got any guidelines that you're using?
You know, we have very good teachers. You know, we have very good teachers for these early classes. And I think that they have the autonomy to set up the classroom the way they think it will best suit what we're dealing with right now. And I think that they will be very capable of handling this. You know, will there be things they have to handle on an ongoing basis or some things that happen that, you know, they need to take a look at? I'm sure there will. But, you know, each elementary or junior classroom teacher will ensure that their own space is as compliant as it can be.
What about moments like recess and or even going to the bathroom or getting a drink of water or lunchtime? How are those things going to be handled to keep the physical distancing requirements?
Well, we're not allowing students to drink from their fountains anymore. They have to bring a container and fill their container. So, and then there's going to be constant cleaning of all the hard surfaces in the school. They're going to eat their lunch within their classroom. They're going to have designated spaces on the playground. I think that's, you know, there'll be a lot of little things that the teacher probably does as well, but those are kind of the general rules.
Now, what about busing? This was a huge issue for many parents. In our past interview, you were not too sure about the busing and what it was going to look like. Has that changed since we last spoke?
I don't know exactly what it'll look like. We've certainly had conversations around it. We certainly feel that students, you know, should be and will wear masks on the bus. We're trying to work it out so that families sit together on a bus to have as much spacing as possible. We also have to work with our coterminous board because we share busing with them. And there's talk about loading the bus from back to front so that the student that sits at the back gets on first. And a lot of those things, that would require a lot of planning because, you know, we are driving all over the country picking up students. And then getting off, it would be the opposite, so they're not walking by each other and touching things, and then the buses would be thoroughly clean between rides.
Now, one parent wanted to know, will the children continue to share transportation with the Catholic School Board?
Yes, they will.
Are there going to be more buses because you're not going to be able to fill it the same way?
I suspect there will be, but I haven't had a report from Stitsko.
The duration of trips can be long for some children, and as one parent indicated, up to 45 minutes or more. Is there any special accommodation or changes, or is a child going to be expected to sit in that environment? Because one of the things you hear often about the virus is that it's exposure over a period of time that gets people infected. So I wonder, is any of that going to be addressed?
I don't think it would be possible to have shorter routes. I'm not saying that there might be some situations where you could have shorter routes, but when you're picking up a student that lives the furthest away, student, you can't drive all the way to the school and then go back and pick up the next student. You know, they have to go through and pick up their whole route on the way, or you wouldn't get all the students to school in time to start the day. So I think a lot of it's going to have to be how they're spaced on the bus, that they're wearing masks, that there's proper ventilation on the bus.
Now, what about discipline on the buses? It's always an ongoing issue, but in this case, it's going to be particularly important. Do you know anything about that?
Discipline is up to the driver, and we're going to have a very strict rule book about how children need to sit on the bus and behave on the bus because of COVID. So it will be up to the driver to ensure that happens, and it's just we have to kind of wait and see, if any of the drivers have a problem with that.
Now, the contractor you use, STITSCO, the Student Transportation Service of Central Ontario, it writes in its plans on its website that students will not be accepted on a bus if they're sick. And if there's no parent to take the child, the parents will be notified. But it seems to suggest that a child could be left alone at a bus stop. And I'll just quote from what they've put up on their website. If there is no parent guardian with the child, the driver will contact dispatch to advise the family that a child cannot be transported. Now, it sounds to me like if there is no parent there, is the bus going to wait, or is there a possibility that a child could be left alone while the bus continues on and they're considered too sick to be there? Has that been something that's been addressed?
Well, it certainly brings up a question that would be concerning. For the most part, students are catching the bus at the end of their laneway, or they might be, congregating partway down the street at a central bus stop. I know there's lots of exceptions to that, especially when you get in a rural area, where they maybe have to walk, they might have to walk a kilometer down the road to catch a bus, and that would be problematic for sure. Hopefully that would just be the older students, that younger students would have someone with them waiting for a bus. But I think an older student that was sick would probably just go back home. A younger student, I would have to check with STITSCO, but I can't see a situation where the bus could sit and wait while someone drives back home from work, to pick up a child. But normally younger children would not be waiting at a bus stop alone. Like, there would be other people there, or parents would be waiting with them. The very small children generally don't, especially in the country, they're not going to walk down the road and wait alone at a bus stop.
How is cleaning going to work? Is there going to be hand sanitizing stations, and how are washrooms going to be cleaned? Those kinds of things. How's that all going to work?
There will be hand sanitizing stations. There will be hand sanitizers in every classroom. There will be our custodians will be working extra hours. There will be thorough cleaning every day in the school. There will be constant cleaning. I think it's at least three times a day of all the hard surfaces in a school. I think that's pretty much it.
One of the parents suggested that it would be really helpful if a YouTube video could be put up somewhere that they could see a tour of a school or a classroom to get a visual picture in their mind of what's going to be going on. So I just want to mention that because I thought that was a really interesting idea, and some parents said that they would think that would be helpful to assure them that everything's going to be okay. I just wanted to pass that along.
Now, I know we're thinking along those lines as well. And we last night we had a meeting, and we found out that we actually have videos on wearing masks, that helps children understand how to wear them. They, use a bit of a cartoon in them to help students, to make it a little bit more enjoyable for the students, and that will be available as well.
Will there be any common spaces that students will be using, either outside, libraries, administration, guidance? How are those things going to be handled?
Common spaces are not, as far as I know, are not going to be available to students. They're going to be in their classrooms. They're going to have set breaks during the day, set lunch hours. It's not going to be the usual way things are at school. They're not going to be able to wander around and stand in groups in the hallway or, a library or somewhere like that. I'm sure they'll use the library, but it will have rules on how they use it as well.
How are high schools handling the hands-on learning situations? For example, if a parent wants to do learn at home, but things like shop classes, art classes, music classes, and so forth, how are those things going to be handled?
I'm not sure that they can all be handled from home. I don't know how you would take a shop class from home. And that's something I could probably get you more information on, but I just can't see that all of these hands-on courses could be handled from home. There may be some, I know of people who take music classes at home, and they actually send, you can believe this, send the homework back and forth on the internet, you know, once the student has practiced and recorded and sent it back. But I think a lot of these hands-on programs would be very difficult to do from a distance point of view, but I could get you more information.
No, I appreciate that. Now, if I'm a parent and I'm listening to this, where could I go to maybe get answers like this, just in case they want to go and check it out afterwards?
I would always try our website first. We have a wealth of information on our website, and I think it's fairly easy to navigate for parents. If they really can't find the answer, then they should call their school. And if they don't get the answer that they want from the school, we can always put them in touch with the superintendent. Or if they call their trustee, then the trustee would direct them to who they should talk to at the school.
Now, what assurances can you give parents who choose to learn at home in terms of the quality of the education? Is it going to be similar, if not equal, as being at school? There's oftentimes you'll hear teachers and others saying, you know, it's not the same, it's not as good.
I think when we talk about it not being equivalent to learning at school, it's more to do with the social aspect of learning. Like a lot of, you know, when we remember back to when we went to school, half of the fun of learning was being there with, you know, other people your same age and the interaction you had with people all day. So I think that's what's going to be missing. I think children who struggle a bit trying to learn might have a bit more difficulty at home, because they haven't got someone right there for an immediate answer. Although the new rules from the ministry are that they have to have, I believe it's up to 275 minutes out of 300 a day on synchronous learning, which is face-to-face. You know, they have to, both have to be on the computer and able to talk to each other.
How is that going to be handled then in terms of learning from home? Is it going to be up to the teacher to sort of have a laptop open and doing the synchronous learning?
Well, it wouldn't necessarily be at the same time. So you're going to have a teacher in the classroom that's teaching that particular class, and then you're going to have another teacher that's teaching the online education. So that online teacher would have all the online students, you know, on joining virtually to have a classroom. There's a lot of things to iron out, but I mean, it's a lot of work has gone into in doing the best we can to make it an equivalent learning experience. But there's, you know, it's going to require more teachers. It may require, like we're going to have people who specialize in, not specialize, but they are hired to be an online teacher, or that's their role for the year.
Okay, now what about parents who wish to choose the learn at home option, but lack the resources such as computers or access to the internet or other technologies?
Access to the internet is the most difficult one. We can provide the family with a computer for their children, but lots of times even with that computer, they're not close to an internet surface. If they live in a really rural area, there may not even be one available. There is an internet stick that you can give students who live in an area where you really can't, you know, there isn't a service available, but it doesn't always work, because the reason it isn't there is because, you know, the signals don't work in that area. So there are some problems that are difficult to handle. I don't think there's very many students who would fall into that category. But part of online learning, part of the planning for online learning is providing our students with a computer. And of course, then they have to have internet access somehow.
Now, I know parents have had up until August 19th to let the board know if they're going to choose the learn at home option. But what if they miss the deadline? Is it too late? Or if they start school in the fall and they're finding that it's not working or that they've changed their minds, is there going to be an option to learn at home or go back to school? Is there some flexibility?
I think the flexibility would be at a natural break. You know, I don't think you can sign up for online learning or in-school learning and then say a month later, oh, well, I don't like this, you know, for some reason I want to change. But perhaps you could change at the end of a semester or the end of between seasons, like maybe after December. I'm not sure exactly what those breaks would be, but you can't just keep changing back and forth. There'd be no way we could handle that.
So what's the policy then? Just so we're clear, I don't want to leave any ambiguity. So what is the policy? It'll only be on particular breaks that you can change. Is that right?
It has to be a natural break in the learning system for them to change. We can't just change midstream.
Okay.
Now, I wouldn't say that you know, that's our thinking on it right now. Whether I don't know that it's been written into policy, but that's what I'm hearing staff say is the best way to go with this.
Fair enough. One of the points that you made the last time we spoke was the need to have a flexible plan that dealt with the diversity of schools that the board serves. Yeah, when I read the plan, it seemed like there's not a lot of particular accommodating or recognizing the difference between schools. Can you give me some examples of where there is local flexibility to meet the needs of a particular school rather than just the board as a whole?
I'm not going to name a school, mm-hmm. but where you might need flexibility, if you've got in some of our more urban areas, you could have schools with 600, 700, 800, 900 students in them. And their needs are going to be very different than some of our rural schools where maybe there's only 110 or 120 children in the whole school. So there has to be some flexibility in our rules to allow those who don't need to do everything that we're doing somewhere else because there's so few students in the school. I'm not sure if that's what you were getting at, but...
No, I think you've answered my question. Since we last spoke 2 weeks ago, more money has come from the province. Have these monies helped at all, and are they sufficient?
We won't know if they're sufficient for some time, and it's also important to realize that this is not new money. We certainly heard that we have more money to work with, but what that really means is we're allowed to go into a deficit. We're allowed to use our reserves. So it's not new money into our board. And when we use reserves, I mean, I'm sure you can understand that means whatever it was reserved for is going to be a need down the road. So, yes, we understand the need to put this money into ensuring that under COVID we do everything possible to ensure the safety of our students. But at the same time, it's going to create some problems down the road.
Has there been no assurance from the provincial government that those reserves will be topped up after the fact? Has there been any talk at all about that?
None at all. And we're going to send a letter to make sure that they understand that there's a need and that should be looked at, that we should be getting that money back somehow. But right now, no. We just have, maybe we've been given the right to use it. That's all.
Do you feel you have sufficient funds with the model that you've got, the monies that you've been given and dipping into the reserves? Is that going to be sufficient to hire the people you need in terms of teachers, cleaning staff, whatever?
Well, it will allow us to hire some more custodians. It will allow us to hire some more teachers, to create some new or extra classrooms in classes where we really can't handle the number of students. Is it enough? I don't know. I don't think it is. We're going to use it in the best way possible, where the greatest need is. But with money, there's always something else you could do.
Now, what about supply teachers? Are you going to be limiting the number of schools that they're allowed to work at during the year?
I don't know the answer to that question. Just let me think about it for a moment. When we have to have a teacher in the classroom, so if the teacher's not there, we will have to bring in a supply teacher. It would make sense that supply teacher can't be popping from one school to another. So there, we will have a guideline. I just don't have that guideline at the tip of my right now.
There are the larger schools that have on-site daycare. Are they going to be functioning the same way that they were functioning before, where the children will be able to go directly to the daycare, or how is that system going to work?
Well, we've been, talking about the daycares and thinking about how we will deal with the daycare in our schools. Right now, the idea is just to let them continue, of course, with the safety measures in place. There will be cases where maybe we need more classrooms and we might think about maybe moving the daycare into a more common space because they all stay together anyway. But there's nothing specific on that right now. Other than they will be there, and we know they will be expected to follow guidelines for COVID.
The daycares pull on different classes and different age groups, and you've talked earlier about, keeping the same group of kids together.
The cohorts together, yeah. Yes.
So I guess there's been some parents that are, worried about now all of a sudden you're going to be mixing these kids in the daycare situation. Has that been considered?
I had misunderstood your question. question, sorry.
I apologize.
I was thinking more of the students who come to the daycare because their parents work, so they, you know, that's the daycare in the town happens to be in the school, so they bring their students. I wasn't thinking of students at the end of the day going into the daycare with other students. So I would need to get you a bit more information on that.
What is going to be the delivery plan for children who have independent education plans?
All of our students, like if they're on an IEP, that IEP will still be followed. I can't see where that would be an issue because it's an individual plan for that student. And if that student's in that classroom, the teacher will follow that plan. I can't see how that might be affected by COVID, really. If their IEP says that they have to have some alone time, then that would have to be accommodated, but it's already being accommodated. So I don't see that changing.
Now, what about those children who have need physical assistance? Will the teacher be allowed to physically assist those students in need? And
Yes. Those students with physical disabilities, they're going to come to school the same way they always did.
This raises another aspect, which is the physical demands of teaching, especially for young children. I mean, touching, wiping noses and tears and other forms of acceptable contact that are sometimes needed. What are teachers being told to do about in the face of physical distancing in these situations?
You know, we're doing as much as we can to ensure that physical distancing is considered in all aspects. But a teacher in a classroom, there's going to be cases, I think, where they have one-on-one with their students. They're all in the same classroom. They're all in the same cohort. I don't know how you would get around that. There just will be times when a teacher is going to have to interact individually with a student. So,
what about cases of discipline where a teacher might need to deal with forms of bullying where children might spit or cough on one another deliberately or pull down masks or just generally misbehave? What are you doing about that?
That would be up to the teacher. I mean, the teacher knows how to discipline her class, you know, what's acceptable and what isn't. And I think that's the prerogative of the teacher. I don't know that we are trying to re-educate the teachers. I think that this is something that they know.
Okay. Now, one parent asked, are schools allowed to accept donations of masks for their students? Are those kinds of things being accepted? You know, people wanted to help out doing certain things. What's going to be the policy around those sorts of initiatives?
I hadn't given much thought to that, but certainly, you know, and we're not calling out or looking for donations, but if someone wants to be helpful, I think the big thing would be to ensure if you're going to make a donation that it's still in the package, you know, that it's clearly not been handled, that kind of thing. I would check in with the school, you know, the particular school that you're looking to donate it to, talk to the principal who can, you know, give them all the guidelines around how they would do that. I think it's wonderful that people would want to do that.
I got a lot of questions and a lot of people have a lot of concerns, and I've done my best to translate those into questions I've asked you today. But can we just one more time go over the ways in which parents can reach out to you to get answers to their concerns? Because I was overwhelmed by the number of people who had specific questions, detailed questions. And I know that this is hard for you to come on and to have all the answers right off the tip of your tongue. So if we haven't answered all the questions specifically or they want to find out more information, can you just repeat for us how they can best get the answers that they need to make the decisions that they need to make and to do to serve their best interests?
Sure. I know that it's been hard for parents to wait. It was hard for us to wait, too. You know, we waited a long time to find out what the ministry expectations were. We made lots of plans that got changed. They're changed daily. We have to deal with that. We're constantly wanting to know everything because we're very short of time right now. School starts in a couple of weeks. So the parents are feeling that even more because they only hear what we put out after we hear it. So I hate to say this, but there is more information coming that will come out through the school system to everyone. And I know it's difficult to wait, but a lot of these decisions are just being finalized right now. And parents will be informed as soon as we know, which has to be shortly. So for the most part, I think if you can just hang on a little bit, most of the questions that you have will be answered by the school board through your schools, you know, through the system we have for interacting with our parents. If someone has a burning question that they really need an answer to right now, I think the best idea would be to contact through your school, contact your principal or your teacher, if you know who your teacher is, and get the questions. If they can't answer it, then call us, get in touch with the superintendent through the school board. They can call their trustee if they don't know who that might be, and the trustee could help them find the right person to call. But honestly, all that information is on the website. If you go to the either the general website for Kawartha or Pine Ridge, or every school has its own website, it will give the list of all the names of the people and how to contact them. Or try our website, you know, because our website has a wealth of information. I would try that first, to be honest.
All right. Diane Lloyd, I want to thank you once again for taking time to talk to me today. I know this is a pressing issue for many, many people, and it's truly appreciated. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Do the same. That was Diane Lloyd, chair of the Kawartha Pine Ridge District School Board. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.